Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
The Boston Celtics signed Malcolm Brogdon last offseason to be the missing piece on a team that wants to win a championship. And so far, he's delivered. He's played key minutes off the bench and shown a knack for making clutch plays. Take, for example, last night in a first-round playoff game against the Atlanta Hawks. At the very end of the first quarter, Celtics guard Derek White slaps the ball away from a Hawks player, gets it to Brogdon. The clock's running out, so Brogdon pulls up from the Leprechaun logo at half court and shoots.
Brogdon sees it the whole time, takes his time, lets it fly, and the bank is open.
That sound from NBC Sports Boston. On-court heroics, though, are just one part of Malcolm Brogdon's impact. Throughout his career, he has been an outspoken advocate for criminal justice reform and other equity issues. Malcolm Brogdon carries a spirit of leadership inherited from his grandfather, John Hurst Adams, who was a leader in the civil rights movement who studied at Boston University's School of Theology alongside Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. When we spoke with Malcolm Brogdon a few days ago, that's where we began, with his grandfather's legacy.
People see all the, I think a lot of the stories now about how he marched with Dr. King and all the amazing things he did out in the public's eye. But to me, he was just my grandfather. And for so long, until he passed, I didn't really understand his greatness. When you have such a great figure in your family, that's sort of the patriarch of the family, a lot of the time you don't see what amazing impact they're having on the world around you and how they've really shaped the world for you to really step into in an easier way than they did. And that was my grandfather. And when he passed, since he's been gone, I've actually done more research. I've actually got more intrigued on who he was and his impact and what he stood for. And he truly was an amazing man and, you know, did amazing things during a very tumultuous time.
Do you feel like you have stepped in or starting to step into his greatness now? Do you feel challenged, like that's what you've got to strive for the rest of your life? I mean, now that he's passed, how does that greatness sit in front of you or sit with you?
I think it's different. I think that was his path. I think I have my own path. I think, you know, at this point, I'm in the NBA. This is where I'll really build my wealth, build my connections, build my platform to shed light on, you know, whatever I choose to shed light on. And a big piece of that is going to be criminal justice reform, civil rights issues, areas that really impact the black and brown community. So I think there definitely will be some huge overlap between my grandfather's legacy and mine going forward.
It's my perception, but it might not be true. It's my perception that while prior to 2020, you were already speaking out on issues, you were talking about racial justice, you were stepping forward in this legacy of community and service, that summer of 2020, after the murder of George Floyd, it felt like you kicked it into a different gear. Is that true, or is that my perception?
I definitely was speaking out before, like you mentioned. And I think once the murder of George Floyd occurred, I think I just had more opportunity to speak out. As far as me saying I need to ramp it up, it wasn't really that type of thinking. It was more so, here's an opportunity. People are bringing me more opportunities to speak out, to speak up, to shed light on my thoughts and the things that I care about. So I really just accepted the opportunities, and that way I had more of a platform.
You've talked about basketball as your chance to build your wealth, build your platform, the things that you're going to talk about. Let's look at 2020 as the intersection of those things. You have more invitations. You have more opportunities. It's a summer of a different level of reckoning and wakening among those who weren't paying attention before, not among everybody, but among those who weren't paying attention before. Did your priorities shift among criminal justice, racial equality, and had basketball, the investments you'd made in playing pro basketball as that platform, paid off in the ways that you wanted them to for activism and community service when that moment came?
I definitely think my not priority shifted, but I think I did double down. I think before 2020, before COVID, before the George Floyd murder, I think this country, people in this country understood the importance of criminal justice reform, of, you know, the issues around police brutality, all these things that were going on. But when that happened in conjunction with COVID, I think it sort of heightened people's awareness and the attention and focus that was put towards those things. And that was the same for me as well. I knew these were issues beforehand, but in this moment, they were magnified. The stage for them was far greater, far bigger. So I definitely did put, for me, more focus on it, and it did make me want to double down on it more and really sort of narrow my focus in on those issues. And I think basketball, you know, has really given me the platform and the influence, because I always tell people this. I'm no expert on criminal justice reform nor civil rights issues or these issues of police brutality, but I'm someone that cares. I'm a man that has influence because of the job that I have, because of the amount of money that I make. I think that makes people care about what you think. And when you have people's ears, I think you have a choice of to speak out or not. And I don't think there's a fault on anyone that doesn't speak out, but my path and who I am and my background is, you know, I'm far more in tune with speaking out and trying to have an impact with my voice.
We're speaking with Malcolm Brogdon of the Boston Celtics as we get to know him here on Radio Boston. You say that you're no expert, and yet you completed a master's degree in public policy at UVA while you were playing basketball there. You were raised essentially on the campus of Morehouse, where your mom's a senior administrator, three lawyers in your family, a family deeply rooted in service and activism and commitment. I've wondered, was basketball always the plan?
No, basketball was not. Having good grades in the classroom, not excellent, but having good grades in the classroom and getting an excellent education in college was the plan. And then however that unfolded was your destiny. Basketball was always the extracurricular that I put all my focus and all my hard work outside of education into. And then, you know, it got to a certain point where I ended up getting scholarships, and it actually helped me get a better college education. It really worked out. I ended up deciding between Harvard, Virginia, Vanderbilt, you know, a few great schools, and it allowed me to, you know, really pick between. There was no loss there. So I ended up going to University of Virginia, getting a stellar education, and at the same time getting my public policy degree and excelling on the court and allowing me to go to the NBA. So it definitely all, I think, happened in conjunction and helped one another.
What lit you up most in the classroom? All that studying you did, what did you love most?
As I went through my first 3 years, I wasn't sure what I really wanted to focus on. I wasn't sure how I wanted to make an impact in the world. I knew from my early travels in childhood that I would want to make an impact on Africa, on people that are less fortunate, on people that don't have clean water, or people that don't have food, that don't have shoes on their feet, that were just less fortunate than I am. But I didn't know what specifically. And once I got into my master's program, you know, master's programs are built so that you have a very narrow focus on one thing. You can leave and you know sort of what field you're going to step into. And that's what it did for me. It allowed me to focus on clean water. It allowed me to sort of enhance my vision, make me more decisive on really what I wanted to focus on. And that was clean water for me. That was the way I wanted to help make an impact overseas, specifically in Africa. That policy was the way I knew I could make a difference in that. You know, I think policy is really what creates dramatic, systematic change in this world. And then specifically clean water would be the way I wanted to affect that.
So then I got to know how it must have felt. So now you've got the Brogdon Family Foundation, and you in March spoke before the UN General Assembly advocating on clean water. So to have that light you up in college and to be one of the few people in the world who gets to go that far in being able to talk to world leaders and public leaders and influence them, how did that feel?
It was exhilarating. You know, there's so many amazing things that happen, that have happened in my basketball career. Winning Rookie of the Year my first year, playing on a team that made the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, there's so many stages in your NBA career that can be really amazing. But my visit to the UN was so different, and it really was. It was in the area of my life that I feel is my passion. Basketball has never been my passion. Basketball has been something that I loved, that I enjoyed growing up, playing with friends and really getting better at every day. I enjoyed the grind. I've enjoyed the grind. I still do. But my passion is helping people. That's the long-term, you know, overarching legacy goal. And the UN was a giant step in that direction. So I found that honestly way more gratifying than anything I've, you know, experienced on the court. You know, being able to speak in front of world leaders is such a privilege because of the game you play. So there's an appreciation for what basketball has brought me, but there's also a perspective of this is far more important. This is far more exciting and fulfilling in a way.
I do have to ask, what do you love about the grind?
I love getting better incrementally. So I always tell people this, when you have a workout one day, when you're on the court, you have a skill session, you shoot a lot of shots. And being able to say, I came in today, I made, you know, 150 out of 250 shots. And then you come in the next day and you make 151 out of 250. That's the incremental change. That's the way you feel yourself getting better. It's the grind. You don't take leaps and jumps every day when you're working out, but it's the incremental being dedicated to your craft that actually creates the character, that actually molds you, that actually when you win a championship or you win an award, those are the days you're thinking about, because that's where you really are winning the award day after day. It's not at the end when people see the finished product.
So we had been at the UN. I'm going to stay at this narrower focus of the court and the city here in Boston for a minute now. I want to talk about Boston. You know, you grew up a lot of time on basically the Morehouse campus in Atlanta. You've played pro basketball in Milwaukee and Indianapolis. Now you're here in Boston. What has your experience been like in this city as a public leader, as a Black man, as a basketball player? What has it been like here?
I've honestly had a great experience in Boston. You know, you hear that Boston is it's a predominantly white city, can tend to be racist. You hear a lot when you're not from Boston, but you move there. And my experience in Boston has been good. Not to say that those things aren't going on, but honestly, when you're a Celtic, you're put up on a pedestal. Even as a Black man, you're put up on a pedestal, and people don't treat you like the rest of the population. And I've had it. People have really embraced me. I've continued to be outspoken, and there hasn't been backlash on that. I think it is a progressive city. I think I've been embraced in a lot of ways. And then basketball wise, the organization has embraced me and allowed me to be myself, which I really appreciate.
Let's stay with basketball just a minute longer. So you come to the Celtics. So 2017, you're Rookie of the Year. Before you come to the Celtics, you're starting point guard for the Indiana Pacers. You're not starting here at the Celtics, but you were brought here to be the missing piece of a puzzle in a team that wants to win the NBA championship. How do you see your role on this team? And do you like your role on this team?
You know, I see my role on this team as being a starter that comes off the bench to fill any holes that are needed on any given night. And I feel like I have done that up to this point. And I have enjoyed the role. This has been a role that's been the most challenging role of my career. I went from a role in Milwaukee where I started. I played, you know, with Giannis and Chris Middleton. I played with great players, but I started, but played a smaller role, but started on the floor, which is a great position to be in. Then I moved to Indiana, where I'm a first and second option. Me and Domas Sabonis are really the two leading the charge there. A lot more pressure, a lot more eyes on you, a different level of having to carry the weight in Indiana. And then I go to Boston, where it's a completely different role than both, and I'm coming off the bench and having to really learn a completely new role on a team, and it's on an excellent team. So you're learning on the fly. This is a team that made it to the finals last year, so it's a well-oiled machine that you're having, you're basically plugged in and you have to play and pick up everything. You're drinking through a fire hose. So it's definitely been a challenge for me, mentally, physically, all of it. But then at the same time, you're playing with great players. This is the most talented team I've played with. So in a lot of ways, it makes the game easier for you when you step on the court. But more than anything, this adjustment to Boston has been a mental challenge for me. It's mentally changing the way you view yourself. It's having to humble yourself. It's having to check your ego, but also have enough ego and enough confidence to get on the floor and compete, still play at a high level, and help this team do what we need to do.
You've said you love basketball, but it's not your passion. Changing the world, leaving it better for the world and for your children, that's the passion. So what's the dream when you're not playing basketball anymore? What do you want to be next?
I've thought about this. This is something, a question, a topic in my head that I think is very fluid. I think it changes by the month, by the year. As I meet new people and have new experiences and see the world change in front of me, I think right now I know I want to travel with my family and make sure that my kids see everything in this world that I can show them. I'm not going to be able to show them everything, but I want to show them as many cultures, as many countries, as many different types of people and different types of ways of living so that they can live a life of, I think, of service, of gratitude, and of perspective. That's my number one goal after I'm done playing. I think I will continue to work and do something that is fulfilling with my time and that I can continue to help people. I definitely will continue with my foundation and that will continue to grow. But my priorities are my kids and, you know, showing them as much of this world that I can.
Malcolm Brogdon of the Boston Celtics, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.